Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
We haven't done a show like this, Fred, in a long time, and it's one of my favorites. We've got our list shows.
Yeah, we got our list shows.
Like the list of not so old things.
And then we like to go through Creation Magazine. We haven't done that in a while.
Yes, and they have their focus section at the beginning of the magazine, Creation News and Views. So many rapid-fire, great science reports that strongly affirm the biblical worldview.
Yeah, they're short and to the point, but man, you even get detail out of them. So, Bob,
yeah.
For example, the first one, remember our list of evolution's big squeeze?
Oh, yeah.
Well, right. We got trees coming into play here.
Oh, boy, these trees. They found these trees. Actually, they're fossilized remains of trees. They're known as trace fossils. They found these trees in a layer, a strata, an abandoned quarry in New York State. Now, to start with, when did they say that trees evolved? Well, that's changed a lot over the last 20 years. If you Google the question, the top result from a PhD biologist says 350 million years. But if you go back two decades to 1999, Science Daily, they reported 345 to 360 million years ago, that's when trees allegedly evolved. But interestingly, they were referencing a letter in the journal Nature from that year, and that letter put it at 370 million years ago, showing how arbitrary they are in declaring these dates.
Yep.
Well, here's a quote from that Science Daily article about this first modern tree that they dated to 360 million years ago. And note the pattern here that we creationists highlight repeatedly. Quote, "The attachment of the branches was the same as modern trees. We had always thought that this type of branch attachment, was modern, but it turns out that the first woody trees on Earth had this exact same design." And they call it design. But nowadays, they claim that trees evolved 390 million years ago. So this newest discovery, Fred, how old?
They assign the age of 386 million years.
Okay, now that's just under the wire. But 20 years ago, it was squeezing the evolution timeline, but they've continued to stretch that timeline and already to the breaking point, as we've seen. And if they're to be honest about it, they'd see that also. But still, 386 million years is just under the wire. But Fred, we've amassed many discoveries that aren't just under the wire.
Like our list of discoveries squeezing evolution.
Yeah.
You know, like birds evolving before birds.
Oh, Fred, we've got dinosaurs ate rice before rice evolved. Turtle shells existed 40 million years before they began evolving. Insects evolved tongues for eating from flowers 70 million years before flowers
evolved.
They were
really getting ahead of themselves.
Yeah, so the whole thing about evolution's big squeeze, and I love that show, you and I did that some months ago. It presents the evolutionist with a double quandary because, for one, they're running out of time for anything to evolve because the pattern, and we list scores of discoveries of where things are being found earlier and earlier and earlier because the fossil record is mostly the results of the global flood.
Yeah, and it's squeezing the amount of time that they have, like you said, for things to evolve. It's
right.
Getting narrower and narrower.
And therefore, they're in the fossil record with no possible ancestor. So they appear just suddenly, fully formed, as here are trees from their roots. These are two different species of trees in this forest. But also, they show that they are complex, like modern organisms, such that typically Often, Fred, they look identical to modern organisms. Like fossil shrimp and modern shrimp look identical, but they give them different scientific names, those binomial species and genus names, so that people think, oh, wow, that was a different creature. And even when they look identical.
Yeah, and Bob, with a straight face, they will say, this is evidence for evolution. Because evolution happens so fast, you know, you would find stasis, things that already are fully formed.
Yeah, that is so funny. Right. When there's evidence lacking, they call that evidence for how great it works.
Yep. That's how desperate they are.
Yes. They pointed out, the researchers who found these fossils, that they were recovered with several well-preserved fish and other fish fragments seemingly impounded by the trees.
Wow. Yeah.
So like when the trees are getting buried, they're getting buried with the fish. And that's because, as we've said 1,000 times on this show, the vast majority of the fossil record, the geologic column, is the result of the global flood.
Exactly.
And so how
this
often...
sure sounds like a historical event that really happened.
Yes. You find clams in fossil graveyards everywhere around the world.
On mountain ranges.
Yeah. Fish. Yeah. And even like at Dinosaur National Monument, we've argued they should rename it to Clam National Monument because they find way more clams than they do dinosaurs.
Yeah. And in the closed position often, which means they were buried alive.
Yes, exactly. We have a great, very brief list of the order of deposition from the global flood. And it's on our webpage, evidence, rsr.org/evidence, the evidence for the global flood.
Wow. Slash evidence. That should be a really, really big page for creation for rsr.org.
It's a nice, succinct, bulleted list of the scientific evidence for the global flood.
You know, that's what's great about rsr.org. You can go there and get succinct information on where to go. You're looking for a specific topic. You're going to find it right away.
Right. And on so many other creation sites, Fred, and even though they're the world's greatest creation ministries, if you want to find, like, for example, the evidence for the global flood, be prepared to read about 25, 30 articles and watch 4 or 5 videos and maybe listen to a handful of interviews. It might take you about 4 weeks. So what we do on all the major themes like dinosaur soft tissue is we try to make a list on one page so at a glance people could get the scope and the significance of the evidence on that topic.
Yeah, like for the Big Bang, same thing.
Yes.
A really nice bulleted list.
Oh.
Transient events, you know, a related
topic. In the
solar
system.
Yeah.
On the moon.
This, yep.
So fun. Okay, so that's the trees squeezing evolution.
Yep. Well, here's another one. And this one is going to be a bigger squeeze, a tighter squeeze. I mean, I'm not sure even how you say that, but green seaweed is now discovered to be 200 million years older than previously thought.
Okay. Now, when you're talking about seaweed, people might think, well, that's not very advanced. But you're talking about multicellular organisms where a single cell is more complicated than the space shuttle. So,
big time. And that cell doesn't have priority inversion problems like they had on one of those satellites.
So it's been 160 years since Charles Darwin and his Origin of Species. Paleontologists have been combing the planet. They have this extensive historic framework and discovery after discovery. Does a month go by without a major revision that, and it's always earlier, 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 so that they've run out of time, even on their time frame, for things to have evolved, like with the Cambrian explosion.
Exactly.
And they find that these things are wildly advanced. They have no ancestor, no evolutionary ancestor in the fossil record. There they are. And oftentimes, they're just like, in fact, with this species, right? They say it's just like a modern species of
seaweed.
Seaweed.
Yeah. And so again, 800 million years is what they originally said. But they were way off. They need to add 200 more million years.
Yes.
To get to 1 billion years.
Yes. Wild.
And so they have very little time for seaweed, which isn't simple. It's not a simple organism. Yes. It's complex with complex cells.
So since we're throwing around hundreds of millions of years, could we talk about the central nervous system?
Sure.
Because, again, in the U.S., this is in the western U.S., where there are two sites where they find Cambrian fossils. Fred, Cambrian fossils were bottom dwellers that lived at the bottom of inland seas at the time of the global flood. So, of course, when the earth is being flooded, they're the very first things to get buried. Trilobites and all kinds of wondrous and amazing. I mean, it looks like a fantasy land when you see these creatures that lived in the early Cambrian. So this story covered by Creation Magazine comes from, they say, the evolutionist, about 500 million years ago. And Fred, folks might be wondering, of course, where are these reports coming from? Well, the tree that's 36 million years too old, that came from Current Biology, December 2019, a leading peer-reviewed journal. The green seaweed, that came from the journal Nature, Ecology, and Evolution, February 2020. Well, this report on these Cambrian bottom-dwelling creatures comes out of the Proceedings of the Royal Society Biological Sciences, December 2019. Fred, they say they believe these things lived around 500 million years ago, but stunningly, in their fossils, they could see the remains, like the chemical remains of their central nervous system preserved.
Yeah. And they say that, you know, the nervous system is prone to rapid decay relative to other tissues under, you know, laboratory conditions.
Right.
So this thing shouldn't be there. So there,
but there it is.
There it is.
It shouldn't be for 500 million years. You have the same biological chemicals. We're talking about biological molecules after half a billion years.
Yeah. So this Focus article points out that the team was emphatic that people need to change their minds on this preconceived notion that nervous tissues are too labile or unstable to become fossilized. But evidence keeps accumulating that neurological preservation is possible. They say it's possible.
It's possible. Happening. It's happening. And in fact, our list, biomaterial fossils, when people Google those two words, a biomaterial fossil, that's a fossil where you still have original endogenous organic material, biological material. So when people Google biomaterial fossils, they find out of like a million potential results, Real Science Radio's list ranked number one.
Number one. That's awesome.
It is really encouraging, isn't it? So Fred, this is a find that escaped us. So we're going to have to go back now. This was from December of last year, just a year ago. On our list that we have, it's easy to find, BF for biomaterial fossil, bflist.rsr.org. So bflist.rsr.org. We have 113 papers that we have identified. There's a link to each one of the papers published in leading scientific journals. And the top one on the list was published in the journal Nature, where scientists discovered peptide bonds and chelating ligands from dinosaurs.
This is easily the most exhaustive list on the entire internet.
Yes.
Yeah, Bob, we curate this with Dr. Brian Thomas.
Yes, and he has his PhD in paleobiochemistry from the University of Liverpool over in England. Mm-hmm. And he works for ICR in Dallas, the Institute for Creation Research. And Fred, this list is used by not only creation scientists, but secular scientists and especially students, like paleontology students around the world. This is the de facto most authoritative list on the entire internet of all the discoveries that have documented the survival of endogenous. That means it grew within the organism.
Yep.
Endogenous biological material. So when you have red blood cells from a hadrosaur, those are red blood cells grown by the dinosaur and that were used to bring oxygen to his tissues.
Yeah. Dr. Carl Werner gave you huge kudos for this list.
Yes.
In fact, he's got a fantastic video that's available in our store, rsr.org/store. It's Evolution, the Grand Experiment. It's a great DVD.
Yes.
Highly recommend this.
In fact, that's volume one. Volume two is Evolution, Living Fossils. And Fred, you know what we have to do? Dr. Werner did a show with us on living fossils.
You know, we've been doing this show for quite a long time, haven't we, Bob? We're kind of becoming living fossils.
Speak for yourself. No, I guess you're right, Fred. So we need to add the green seaweed to our living fossils page and list. That's at, guess where that is? rsr.org/living fossils. Living-fossil.
And the reason why it's a living fossil, because it matches what we have today.
Yes. And if anybody would like to see this video, I mean, if you get this video from our store, rsr.org, click on the store, browse the science department, you will absolutely love this video. It's almost like you'll end up dancing on your kitchen table. Maybe not, but close to that. That's how great it is. And the first video, it's volume one and volume two, Evolution, the Grand Experiment. And Fred, thanks for pointing it out, because Dr. Werner has encouraged us specifically about this list of biomaterial fossil papers to continue and to keep it updated so that it is the most reliable source on the entire internet for the cutting edge of research in paleontology.
And hopefully save some souls, you know? I really think it can.
Yeah.
Because so many of these college students are so brainwashed. I mean, they never hear the other side.
Yeah, they don't. And dinosaur soft tissue, like red blood cells, dinosaur blood, when you think about it from a big picture, when they lose the dinosaurs, they lose it all because they put so much.
Oh, yeah.
They invested so much into them being millions of years old. Dinosaur blood proves that Jesus shed his. It proves
great,
it.
Great point. Yeah.
Because when we have dinosaur soft tissue, similar to the soft tissue in Egyptian mummy remains, that means that the rock layers those dinosaur bones were buried in cannot be millions of years old. They can only be thousands of years old, like 5,000 years old, 6,000 years or so ago. And what that means is human beings could not evolve from animals because all that time is erased. It's not there. The whole evolutionary account of the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, it's all false. And the only option that remains is that the world was destroyed in a global flood that laid down billions of creatures that became the fossil record. And therefore, the Bible's book of Genesis is correct.
Yep.
It's historically accurate. God made us male and female in the recent past. We rebelled against him. That sin became so horrific that God destroyed the world in a global flood, except for Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives.
Yeah. And it's such a slam dunk, Bob. I mean, it's the biggest play in their playbook. And this list dismantles it. You know, they started with Dr. Seuss all the way up to the most recent evolutionary college textbook, pushing this stuff.
Yes.
It's their biggest play.
Yeah.
And it's so overwhelming.
It's falsified by a single dinosaur red blood cell.
Yep.
A single one. And there have been now 55 papers of these 113. You know, some of them are things like a mosasaur. That's an extinct reptile. It's not a dinosaur. We have Archaeopteryx in the list.
Yep.
But 55 of these are dinosaurs where they found soft tissue in dinosaur fossils and biological material. And so that falsifies the secular worldview. It falsifies an old earth, and it affirms the Bible as God's word. And therefore, in Genesis 3, the prophecy of the Savior who had saved mankind when Satan and the rebellion wants to destroy us, but God would give us the victory through the seed of the woman and Jesus Christ from the virgin conception. He was crucified to pay for our sin and raised from the dead so that all who trust in him could have everlasting life.
Yeah. And what a blessing to be able to do this show, you know? It's so cool to have all this overwhelming evidence. And
wow. Great honor, Fred?
Yeah, it really is.
We've been doing it now for 1,300 years, you said?
Yeah, well, it used to be 1,100 years.
Living
and so
fossils?
The great RSR radio show, Squeeze.
Yeah, right. You just make up any number you want.
Yeah.
So, Fred, we're paging back and forth here in this Creation News and Views section of the current Creation magazine, published out of Australia by CMI, Creation Ministries International. Love those guys. Why don't you pick a next science brief?
Okay. This one's really cool. String discovery ties evolutionary view into knot.
Okay.
And this is, you know, our...
They discovered string?
Yeah, our friends, the Neanderthals.
Yes.
They used string. Now, one might think, well, string, that's just a piece of string.
String.
Yeah.
It's just string. But to use string, they had to make the string. And it turns out it's a very sophisticated process to make string. And they have discovered in a cave in France at a Neanderthal level, attached to a stone tool, a piece of string that has a three-ply construction to it. And Fred, this is yet another indicator, like we've presented over the years, Neanderthals, they took aspirin.
Yep.
They used penicillin.
Yeah.
I mean, not that they knew the molecular biology of it, the microbiology, but they used penicillin. Now we have these Neanderthal making string.
Yeah, and the article says the strands were separated and twisted clockwise with an S-twist, then twined counterclockwise, which is a Z-twist, to form a cord.
Wow. And the researchers, and again, like with mostly everything we report on this show, the data itself is shared by everyone, atheist, evolutionist, creationist. Everybody has the same data. And typically, these discoveries are from the world's leading journals. Sometimes we quote from the creation science journals, which are awesome, but this discovery was just reported in the journal Nature in April 2020, and the researchers point out the skill that is required to make string, and this kind of string. So you just described the clockwise and the counterclockwise different types of twists.
Yep.
Just that boggles my mind. But Fred, then they said that this string makers, they needed to understand plants, seasonality, planting, retting. Retting.
Yeah. R-E-T-T-I-N-G.
It's microbes.
Yep.
It is the way microbes will digest plant matter to leave behind the fiber that you want to use in order to twist your string.
Yeah. And they would also have to understand mathematical concepts, you know, and not to mention the considerable dexterity. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine trying to do this myself. And you have to have.
And think of an ape doing this, for example.
Yeah.
But then also each strand, just like with any artisan, you watch people even weaving silk fibers. We've watched that over our Bible tour of Turkey.
Yeah, and if you want
just stunning.
Yeah, and if you want a rug made of silk, we needed a rug for our living room.
Yeah.
They had a rug down at the furniture store down in Denver for like $35,000 because it was finely weaved with silk.
Wow.
And it's such an intricate process that people actually pay to.
How do they describe it? So many knots per square inch and 1 inch, a linear inch, and the number of knots.
I probably
hundreds or even above hundreds.
Well, I probably should have asked, but when they said the price, I'm like, okay, next.
No, right. Yeah.
Moving on.
So when they make a string like this Neanderthal string, each strand was the right thickness, had the right twist, the right tension, and you had to adjust this and maintain it throughout the production. So it was a real skill. And this is not surprising because, as we know, and the evolutionists are very slow to catch on.
Yep.
We know that Neanderthal are human beings. When I told Lawrence Krauss on this show that Neanderthal were people, he said, "What are people. They're such ditzes.
Yep.
Fred, DNA doesn't lie. Neanderthal, they are people. Neanderthal DNA is closer to our DNA, people all over the world today, than two chimps are to one another.
Yep.
Even two chimps within the same chimp species.
Yep.
There's two species of chimps. So, of course, as all this evidence keeps coming forward, evolutionists will eventually say, oh, well, we always thought they were human. You know, we always thought that. But we've documented at kgov.com/Neanderthal the text by Ian Tattersall, the world's leading expert, evolutionary expert on Neanderthal, his book stating that they are a different species. Mm-hmm. And now we know that people all over the world, like the average European has, what, 3% of their DNA is Neanderthal, and it's not all the same 3%.
Yep.
So Neanderthal are just a people group that got lost into other people groups.
Yep. So the study concluded that Neanderthals were likely just as intelligent as modern humans. You know, Bob, we would probably say they were probably smarter than modern humans.
Oh, of course.
We know that from genetics, from science, yeah, actually, and just in history, you know, the IQ tests, as you go farther back, people were smarter.
They were.
Now, we
smart.
Have more knowledge now.
Yeah, right.
The accumulation of knowledge is higher.
Increasing, but our intelligence, raw intelligent abilities are decreasing because we're degenerating. We're not evolving. We're devolving.
Devolving slowly over time.
And so is every organism in the world, plant, marine, land animal, everything is devolving. Because of mutations, they don't build up the animal and plant kingdom that we see in all the wonder around us. That destroys everything. So, Fred, ancient man, when we think about the caveman animation that we've reported on, rsr.org/genius, the genius of ancient man, you walk through a cave where ancient men, after the global flood, where they lived, and their artwork on the wall is designed to make you think that lions are chasing you as your torch is flickering. That flickering, you see the frames of the animation on the wall next to you. It's just stunning. We have a picture of it on our website, rsr.org/genius. 4,400 years ago, Sumerian calligraphy. We've got 4,000 years ago. The period of Mercury's orbit was known by astronomers in India. That's 4,000 years ago. The Babylonians, they beat Pythagoras to the punch by 1,000 years because, as very recently discovered at the University of St. Andrews in the UK, the Babylonians knew the Pythagorean theorem.
That's cool.
The Babylonians had trigonometry. They beat the Greeks in that by 1,500 years. Calculus and brilliance in Babylon. Calculus. Now, I like to brag that Isaac Newton, the Christian creationist, invented calculus. There was a rudimentary calculus used by the ancient Babylonians. This was published in the journal Science, America's number one science journal, where Babylonian astronomers calculated Jupiter's position from the area under a time velocity graph.
Yeah, which is calculus.
That's calculus.
Yes.
And they figured that out.
Yep.
How about the Antikythera mechanism that was discovered, I think, by Jacques Cousteau? Remember him? Jishy's a squid.
Yeah.
That guy, everything was millions of years old.
And you should kill like tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, to do because the world is overpopulated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Antikythera mechanism that was discovered on the floor of the Mediterranean Sea, it was used by Roman sailors to track the movement of the sun, the moon, and the planets. It had dozens of gears.
Yep. So it didn't tell them that they were going to sail off the end of the earth?
No.
Okay.
Right.
Just checking.
Just checking.
Because I think I read that somewhere, you know.
Some goofy atheist saying the church used to teach. No.
Yep.
The Middle Ages, no. No center of knowledge in known history taught that the earth was flat.
Correct. Yeah, only modern day knuckleheads promote a flat earth. And, you know, speaking of knuckleheads, what about our favorite knucklehead, Dr. Richard Dawkins?
Yes. We should move to the next story because I think we've strung out that last one as far as we could take it.
Okay.
So, sorry. You know, when guys get old, their humor gets bad.
Yeah, cornier and cornier.
Fred, I'm in my 60s. You're in your 40s?
Yeah, 30s, 40s, you know, maybe 50s.
39. So, and my poor wife, she, I don't know how she puts up with it. I actually try to catch myself and cut out like 80, 90% of the jokes behind, I would have told.
Behind every husband is his wife rolling her eyes.
Yes, agreed. So you bring up Richard Dawkins. Oh, this is more than just nuts, right? So Dawkins is the world's most famous atheist evolutionist. And
kind of like the evolutionist marketeer.
Yes. Yeah. He's the propaganda guy.
Yep. He's the Goebbels for evolution.
Wow. Over at Oxford, Will Duffy and I went over to Oxford and we tried to get to him. We went to New College where he teaches and we had a Dawkins 3-to-1 DNA challenge and a beautiful printed out piece of slick card paper. And we did get it to his faculty inbox. That's as far as we got it.
Yeah.
But that challenge, he's certainly had a few years now to answer that. Just like P.Z. Myers responded to our R.S.R. Trocklia challenge, and he said he had no answer. Well, we know that neither Richard Dawkins nor any atheist, secular evolutionist could have an answer to our rsr.org/Dawkins challenge. Yeah. Easy to find.
Yeah. So, you know, and I love the fact that that was kind of a side trip for you. You know, I feel sorry for the reason you were out there. I feel sorry for the guy.
We debated.
Who's going to debate you on the King James only. Little did he know you were going to go out and actually research the King James Bible.
At the Bodleian Library in the rare reading room. We had days access to a national treasure in England, their 1602 Bishop's Bible. And in the margins throughout were notes from teams of King James translators of how they were changing the text of the Bishop's Bible to what became the text of the 1611 King James Bible.
Yeah, to try to put it in the best English that they could.
Yes, yes. Looking at the Greek and the Hebrew and the current English translation of the Bishop's Bible, and they then developed the text of the King James Bible, and their notes, overwhelmingly, we presented the King James translators' own handwritten notes as affidavits in our debate that they utterly reject the King James only position.
Do you remember that graphic I sent you after that debate?
Oh, the boxers.
Yeah. I put your head on Muhammad Ali standing over Sonny Liston. Yeah, it was such a knockout.
I think we have that at kgov.com, kgov.com/KJO. It could have been just KO.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a fun debate. So, yeah, that's what brought us over to Oxford. So, Fred, Richard Dawkins, he got into a mess on Twitter earlier this year. And, you know, he said at different times, just like Darwin wrote in his book, The Descent of Man.
They're hedging their bets, right?
Yeah. Darwin says, you know, why would you expend so much effort, resources on the weak and beggarly, the sick, the infirmed? Why do that when really everything is about survival of the fittest? And he said, but I know that we have to agree that we have to take care of the sick and infirmed, right? Well, he had to say that because of marketing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But tragically, the Nazis, they themselves pointed to Darwinism and survival of the fittest as the explanation for their eugenics, which was cruel.
Yeah.
Murdered millions of people.
Mouth say tongue, it was required reading.
Yes.
Darwin was.
Darwinism.
Yep.
And so to have an evolutionist like Dawkins send out a tweet earlier this year, I mean, he wrote the book, The Selfish Gene.
Mm-hmm.
Take it from a gene, like in genetics, up to a human being who's a criminal, who's a rapist. Well, maybe he's just selfish about his genetics. He just cares about reproduction. Because to evolutionists, everything is about reproduction.
Yep.
That's it. There's no actual morality.
Yeah. Even though they can't explain how even reproduction can happen.
No.
Can evolve.
No. They've all admitted, even Richard Dawkins, that sexual reproduction is beyond fathoming how that could evolve. Yep. In that doofus science guy, Bill Nye, debating Ken Ham, used sexual reproduction as proof for Darwinism when the world's leading Darwinists say we have no idea how evolution could bring about sexual reproduction.
Yep.
Because right off the bat, you throw away 50% of your genes, right, for starters. That's like one problem. So, Fred, could you read Dawkins' tweet? He caused a firestorm, and he immediately came back and said, that's not what I was saying.
Yep. So Dawkins tweeted, it's one thing to deplore eugenics on ideological, political, moral grounds. It's quite another to conclude that it wouldn't work in practice. Of course it would. It works for cows, horses, pigs, dogs, and roses. Why on earth wouldn't it work for humans? Facts ignore ideology.
Okay, here's one reason why it wouldn't work for humans. Because the humans who will impose eugenics to get a superior race, humans like the Nazis or Maoists who slaughtered millions and millions of people, especially the minority groups that they despised, because those people doing the eugenic experiments are helping to destroy themselves. So that's one reason why it wouldn't work.
Yep, good point.
But he backed off, right? And he said, look, you missed the point. I wasn't claiming this. I said it was deplorable. What he actually said was, you just read it. It's one thing to deplore eugenics. It's quite another thing to claim it wouldn't work. And he says, of course, it would work.
Yep.
But of course, it wouldn't work because of the fundamental morality involved in deciding which human beings are unfit. Like Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. The whole thing.
Yep.
She was part of the eugenics movement.
Yeah, and the Democrats in Colorado wanted to make a holiday for her. Remember that?
Oh, wow. And Planned Parenthood in New York City, until like 4 months ago, had an abortion mill named the Margaret Sanger Planned Parenthood Clinic, and they just removed the name because of the whole racism thing, because she was such a racist.
Oh, big time.
She hated blacks.
Yep.
And here are the liberals for decades celebrating Margaret Sanger.
Yep. Almost made a holiday out of it.
Their true colors. You know, primary colors? It's their true colors.
Yes. So Dawkins, he responded the next day with a tweet that said, I simply said deploring it doesn't mean it wouldn't work. Just as we breed cows to yield more milk, we could breed humans to run faster or jump higher. But heaven forbid that we should do it.
And heaven forbid. So he is saying, I mean, he's so double-minded. But he is saying we shouldn't do it, right? I'm against it. He'll even say he deplores it, which is hard to believe. It's like Darwin saying, oh, but we shouldn't do that. Well, he put it in his book and leads millions of people to think, hey, that really sounds like a good idea. So here is Dawkins saying, well, eugenics would work, but we shouldn't do it. Heaven forbid that we should do it. But they point out at Creation Magazine, he doesn't believe in heaven.
Nope. So there's quite a bit of irony there.
I'd say so. And when Dawkins argues then that we should oppose eugenics on moral grounds, he is ignoring what he has admitted in the past, that his atheism provides no foundation whatsoever for morality.
Yeah.
He admitted that. And they
morality is relative to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so years earlier, when challenged with the statement that evolution leads to a moral vacuum, Dawkins replied, so interesting, he said, all I can say is, that's just tough. We have to face up to the truth.
To the truth, yeah. There's no morality if there is no God.
Yep.
There's only preference. And there might be a preference of the minority, there might be a preference of the one, or a preference of the majority. But if the majority think it's okay to lynch blacks or gas Jews or dismember unborn children, that doesn't make those things right, because in fact, they're actually immoral, because the God of the universe revealed in us. He put his conscience in us, and he revealed in the scriptures, thou shalt not kill the innocent.
Yes.
He says in some places, and in the Ten Commandments, he words it like this, thou shalt not murder.
Murder, yep.
So Fred, Creation Magazine, it's really the best creation periodical I've ever seen.
It's my favorite.
Yeah. So we highly recommend subscribing. Just go to creation.com and click on their magazines. And it's just really awesome. So we are out of time. Thanks so much, Fred.
Yeah, great show, Bob. Thanks. And again, our store is at rsr.org/store.
Yes.
And again, we recommend Evolution, the Grand Experiment, and Living Fossils, Evolution, the Grand Experiment. Part one and part two
by Dr. Carl Werner. Just fabulous. You'll dance on your kitchen table after you see this.
And you can hear Dr. Werner on our show. Just do a search for him. You've got a great search engine on the website.
rsr.org/Werner.
There you go.
Werner. So this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.